Welcome to What the Hex, our podcast covering Warhammer Underworlds in under 30 minutes. I'm Davey, and with me today is Phil. How are you doing, Phil?
Doing all right.
Yeah. So we are in the inaugural test episode, you might say. We're going to see what people think of this, but it's something I've been thinking about doing for a long time, and we're going to cover push ploys today. So all those ploys and that shove the fighters around. For chronological reference, we're talking about this just in the aftermath of the big banned and restricted list. If you come back to this episode at a later date and you're wondering why we didn't mention your favorite ploy that came with the troll or season three or something like that, that's where we're at right now. Should say that this is we make no claim to comprehensiveness, some of these cards we may not have used ourselves or haven't seen in a while, so we always reserve the right on any of these episodes to revisit. Hopefully we'll be looking at maybe once every couple of weeks getting something out. We'll talk about that a bit more. But first up, push ploys, and I kind of picked this as a starting point because when I first played this game a little more than a year ago, it was down at Holy Havoc, and Eric and I excitedly made our own decks out of what little we had. And I remember looking at Sidestep and being like, why do I care about one hex? My guys can move four. Like, it's almost nothing. Like, what? So we're going to talk a little bit about the what good is one hex, you know, whether it's you pushing your fighter or pushing someone else's fighter. So, Phil, you want to give us a couple of reasons one hex should be important to you when you're making your deck?
Sure. Well, I guess first off is just the thought that when you think about fighters in terms of how much can you move from a normal move, it's usually around three. So one additional hex is actually pretty significant. You're looking at a 33% increase there if you can get a push before your move or charge. And that can be a big swing when your opponent's not expecting it for either moving across the board to get a nice juicy charge in with some corn guys, or if you're looking to go jump on an objective that your opponent probably thought was out of reach.
Yeah. And even on top of that, so like you talk about bringing somebody in a charge range, what can be even better is you take somebody who is one hex away, and you or I suppose two, and you'd have to say you've got a your only attack actions are range one. You'd have to burn a charge action just to, you know, to get there, get your swing, and then you're hanging out there for the rest of the round. Well, if your enemy is one away, you push in one closer. And all of a sudden, now you can just attack, and you can use, you know, say you do it at the start of the round, you know, then you've got three or four attack actions worth to try and get the job done, unless they hit you back or push you away. But it lets you have that attack and then charge forward, or conversely, forcing someone else to charge. So if you started out next to them and then you use the push to open up a space between, now they got one and one chance only to do it, and they may not have enough damage to do it in one hit, or they might just, you're pushing them into that risk category, right? Like, okay, well, now I got to do this, but I'm risking that one dice roll is going to come out the way I want.
Definitely. Or even defensively, if someone, you know, say like in an orc deck, they move up thinking, oh, I'm going to move up, then play my ploy that lets me attack after moving. But you then afterwards are saying, well, now that you've moved, I'm just going to push you one away. You can't move the rest of the round,
right?
So now you're it's like you charged anyway,
right? Exactly, right. So somebody using the very, very juicy, is it cunning but brutal? That,
yeah, I believe that's the one.
Yeah, where they take a chop, so they're counting on coming in and just wailing away, and you open that up and like, all right, you got your one. That's it. Unless, of course, they got more pushes. Here's another thing. Some of the most powerful ploys in the game create extra action efficiency, right? So you think of some of those cards that popped up on the restricted list, and you're thinking of Ready for Action, Quick Thinker got banned, you know, stuff that is giving you an action for free, basically. And in some cases, that's essentially what the push is. So if you are looking to hold objectives, say, than moving somebody onto an objective. Well, if you have to burn a move, that's one of your only 12 actions you're going to get in the entire game, you know, barring anything else. So if you can get somebody onto an objective with a push, then all of a sudden it's basically giving an action back to do something else, you know. It might be as simple as cycle an objective or pull a car, but it's still something that you don't have to spend time stepping Targor over onto objective.
Yeah. One, you know? Yeah, you never want to waste time with somebody like Targor.
Right. Yeah, exactly. As little time spent on that guy as possible. What else are we getting out of these out of pushes?
Some other things that I was thinking about was massive push ploys, so things like Earthquake or Great Concussion, which I know Great Concussion was recently moved into the, I believe it was moved in the banned list.
Yeah, it's in the banned. One of the three.
Yeah, and there's a few others like Irresistible Prize and some stuff like that where you can move all the fighters on the board. It's still just one hex, but reshuffling the whole board one hex can suddenly change the entire layout of the board. And if your opponent wasn't planning for it, you could have completely ruined their strategy, whatever that might have been.
Sure. Yeah, especially, you know, positioning being king in this. It can be as simple as, you know, we've talked about like getting in range or getting out of range, but it can be as basic. It can effectively be like almost a plus one to hit or a plus one to defend, right? Because if you are able to push a fighter into a supporting position, whether it's defensively or offensively, then you also you buy yourself that half moon or deny it to your opponent if they're in the advantaged position. And that's a pretty big deal, getting that one pip. There's ploys that offer that by saying, you know, like, okay, in the next attack, swords count for hits as well, or whatever the case may be. So it's perhaps not as powerful as, you know, getting you the opportunity to attack when you wouldn't have it before, but it's definitely something to consider there.
For sure. I mean, anything that's going to increase your odds, because, you know, dice are dice, and at the end of the day, they might turn on you. So anything that's going to make your chances better is going to be a huge boon.
Positioning as well, getting into a blocking position. So, you know, say I'm sepulchral guard, and I'm really wanting to hang on that warden, or even, you know, you're doing work with Scritch and Skaven, and just... the enemy could say, you know, they've got an available charge, but you push one of your, you know, nothing fighters into the way. You know, that's what Hungering Skaven is for sometimes, is standing in the way and making sure that they can't get the Scritch. And maybe he can get over to that top, you know, poke right over the top. Keeping whether it's moving your own fighters, or even shoving an enemy fighter that's already charged, you can push that fighter into a position that blocks any counter attacks and such.
For sure. And I guess in the same vein, you can also use it as a means of blocking out objectives, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
If your opponent needs, you know, a four move and they've got four movement to get to the objective, but you just have to put one guy in the way, so now they have to go around, that can be the difference of scoring a late game objective and being completely blocked out and not being able to pick up those, you know, three extra objectives that relied on that one extra objective card.
Right. Yeah. So absolutely. And I think what you can come away with on this discussion of push ploys is that there's so many things you can do with them. Like one hex, and some of them do more than one hex, and some of them do multiple fighters and all that. But when it comes down to one hex, there's so many ways you can spend it that card is rarely going to be sitting in your hand as a dead card. You know, I might have a card. I'm trying to think of a good example. You know, say I got one that is, you know, even one of the ones that have been restricted, like Trap or Pit Trap. If I'm playing against a defensive deck that is all the way up against a wall, well, that's a dead card, right? I don't have anywhere that I can push them to. You know, like drive them back and score those. So that's a powerful ploy, but it can't do anything to me. It's very, very, very rare that you're going to find an occasion where a push ploy is sitting in your hand and there's nothing that you could do that would help you with it. which I think
Definitely.
is a big appeal.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so flexible. And I think that's kind of obvious from what we've been saying, but any card that can be used in every possible phase of the game, whether it's just, being defensive, offensive, movement, scoring objectives, push ploys help you in every single one of those areas.
Right. Yeah, early game, mid game, late game, there's something for them in any of those. I guess about the only way they end up dead in your hand is if you have something that pushes your friendly fighters and you have no friendly fighters left or something like that. In which case in which case I'm sorry for your loss and good thing it's best 2 out of 3. So
Yep,
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah. I guess another thing there's they always work, right? Like, so there's no dice roll to see if they did their thing. Now your opponent may have some counterplay, counteraction, or something like that. But that's also appealing. You're never gonna like drop that card, pick up the dice, and oh no, I didn't hit it. Like that, it didn't end up doing anything for me. So
Yeah.
almost always something it can do, and it should always work.
Yeah, which I mean is huge. There's the one, which one is it? Flickering Step, which it
Oh,
is dice
sure. That's
dependent.
fair. That's
And
fair. Yep.
sometimes you feel like, oh, this could potentially mean I get, three spaces or something, but really when it comes down to it, the odds just aren't there. You're statistically looking at probably just one hex, even with Flickering Step, which at that point you probably should just stick with the guaranteed because,
Right.
like we said before, this is a dice game and odds are not always going to go in your favor.
Yeah.
So anything to control the game without dice is always going to be helpful.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought we're gonna look at some of our ones, and they won't necessarily be we'll run through some things that are powerful, some that we think are just interesting, some that we think like, hey, this isn't a great one, and here's why. I think any of those make some for good discussion points. We'll hit those specifically, but in general, and I would say this question kind of came to me real early on. In general, the idea, I would say, I guess after Gurzags and the Sepulchral Guard released, you were kind of looking at two archetypes of push ploys, and it was sidestep and distraction. Either push a friendly fighter one hex, or push an enemy fighter one hex. Now we've got a whole lot more. But at its core, if you're looking at it, is it more useful to push a friendly fighter, or is it more useful to push an enemy fighter? And there's some reasons you might pick one or the other. You got any thoughts on it off the bat there, Phil?
Yeah, I think that really it's how you built your deck. Who are you playing? Right, if you're playing Steelheart's Champions and you're trying to play super defensively, most likely it's going to be pushing your opponents away from you is probably the better choice for that kind of a deck. But if you're playing, like the Gits, where you've got all sorts of, movement shenanigans that you can do, and you've got a ton of guys to move. Those extra hexes are probably going to end up being super important because you're trying to move what it's 8 or 9 guys when you count the
Right.
squigs.
Yeah.
I think it's really warband dependent, and you have to sort of know going into your deck. What strategy are you trying to accomplish? Because that's going to answer that question for you.
Right. Yep, that's fair. Like your example that gets, one fighter moved can be the difference between, chaining together 4 scurries or just getting the one, whereas with the Steelhearts, maybe a defensive Steelhearts, if they're already in the back wall, well, I can't back up anymore, so I got to back the enemy up. So that's where you're coming from there. I think the other thing is, especially with you're talking about what is your deck trying to do, is if you're trying to get on, if you have objectives that rely on the positioning of your fighters, so hold objective or conquest, right? If you're looking at those, then pushing your friendly fighters is going to be a more useful thing for you. If it's relying on where enemy fighters are, like denial, or there's some weird ones like there's a corn one the Reaver one that's like nobody's on an objective. There's only Slaughter. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the things like distraction, those end up, a lot of times they enter that space of like trying to figure out what the enemies do and disrupting there. So like, hey, I think they're trying to score skirting danger, or extreme flank. Well, then you can peel somebody off the wall. And that's inherently more risky because you're trying to read the tea leaves and figure out what it is they're trying to do. Sometimes it's obvious they just stepped on three objectives, and sometimes less so. So.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So I think early doors, it seemed like the perception was that sidestep was maybe the default, slightly more powerful, because, and again, very, very differing dependent on what deck you're bringing. But if you just look, there was, right out of the gate, that there weren't really any sidestep equivalents, but there were a number of distraction equivalents. You had distraction, you had Peal of Thunder, Scratching in the Shadows, a number of Terrifying Screams, a number of Warband specific distraction duplicates, basically. But it's probably not even fair to say that the one was more powerful than the other. We've since progressed a little beyond that. So.
Yeah. Well, and I think it comes back to, you know, the perception is that it's more powerful, not because it's doing more, but because it has more flexibility.
Sure.
And I think in just more cases, having that opportunity to move your own fighters fits more into the, you know, setting up defensive moves, setting up scores on objectives, setting up, you know,
right,
you name it. Yeah. Sort of know what your opponent's going to be trying to do to, like you said, to take advantage of moving their fighters. And it just is... it's just harder to know that it's going to be as useful for you.
Right, exactly. But yeah, we've been talking about some of these others. We've touched on them a little bit. I think I don't know that I've missed any here, doing the filter and the typing them out, but I think right now we're looking at 35 ploys out there that push a fighter in some way, and it may be as a reaction, it may be just in the normal power step. And we're not going to hit every single one, but I'd like to just touch on a couple and kind of talk about, you know, why that's worthy of discussion, whether it's because it's particularly handy, versatile, because it's not, because it's, you know, and talk about some of those. So, Phil, you got any that caught your eye that you really wanted to bring to light?
So my favorite until recently was Great Concussion.
Yeah.
It just was always a strong choice because of... how you could choose which hex you're pushing from and then move a ton of fighters with it. But now that one's gone, a new one from when I was working with my deck for the 9, Irresistible Prize was one that really caught my eye, just because it's similar where you're choosing sort of that point from where to move fighters. And then you can use it for a number of different things, right? It's not specifically my fighters, your fighters. It's push any fighters that are within two hexes of that token up to an additional hex towards the token, which obviously you could use that to move your fighters up. You could use that to pull your opponent's fighters towards you. You could use that to push them away from you. Given the number of, you know, even if you're just talking one-on-one games, your 5 objective tokens, you're probably going to have a lot of choices from where to pick to move fighters around. And I really like that level of flexibility.
Yeah, and what I love about that is it adds an extra layer to setup when you're dropping objective tokens instead of just being like, well, you know, like say you have a deck that doesn't count on you holding objectives even. All of a sudden it becomes important where you place those, like, all right, maybe I want to put one right on the center line, midline, because that's a good flexible spot to be able to, you know, manipulate when that card comes up. So,
yeah, definitely. And that's a point I hadn't even considered. But yeah, you know, sometimes when you build decks without any objective scoring cards, you just think, oh, I'm just going to throw them as far away as I can to deny them from your opponent. But having some additional cards that interact with those tokens then means that, yeah, you have to think about the board in a different way. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, stick them in a corner so your opponent can't get to them.
Yeah.
That's always good. Shake things up a bit. I like that.
Yeah. Here's one I think is both powerful and pretty interesting. I particularly like the way it's designed is a quick advance. It came out in the leaders pack. Choose up to two friendly fighters other than your leader and push them up to one hex. You can only play this if your leader's on the battlefield. So what's cool about this is like it's got that space of like, okay, well, two is better than one. This is like sidestep, but better, except I can't use it on my leader, and my leader has to be on the board. And so I think it's cleverly done. And I think the other thing that's cool about it is, you know, so positioning, if you only have three fighters on the board, say your Steelhearts, positioning each one of those is extremely important where they're standing. I mean, it's important for every warband, but especially there. But it's harder to use with that warband because as soon as Steelheart goes down, if one of your three goes down and it happens to be your leader, well, that warband's, you can't, it's a dead card. If one of your others goes down, then all of a sudden you're down to, well, this card only is, it's worse than sidestep because I can only push one person now and it's restricted to only the person that's not my leader. So, I think it's a well designed card that doesn't end up being an auto include in, you know, across the board, but is very powerful for some decks.
Yeah, definitely, and I like that with a lot of those leader ploys where they, you know, have, they're usually a bit stronger just inherently. They can do more than the sort of generic ploys, but adding those stipulations then means that your risk reward is inherently higher. Mm-hmm. And that, again, it's sort of like, you know, it's making you rethink about how you're building decks, how you're thinking about the board. And I think that was really important. Mm-hmm. When we were getting to the end of, you know, season one, it started to feel like the competitive decks were becoming pretty well solidified, and it meant that there wasn't a lot of variation anymore. Mm-hmm. Or at least it felt that way. Looking at who was winning tournaments and, you know, some of what happened with the errata around the Cataphrain artifacts and that whole debacle. But but I like that they then, you know, they obviously noticed that and they're thinking about, well, how can we introduce some more variable play? Mm-hmm. So it's not so one-dimensional. Well, this card is just inherently better.
Right. Let's see. Any other cards you want to bring up?
I do really like Center of Attention. It's one that I don't think is going to be able to be used very often, having to, you know, push other fighters towards one of your fighters. Mm-hmm. But I do really like it for certain setups. If you really wanted to, I just immediately thought of, you know, Sepulchral Guard and trying to really build on the Reaper there.
Yeah.
To just try and hit as many people as you can all at once.
Let them live the dream against the ghosts, you know, pull all those, or goblins. God, that would, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously, it's a risky thing to try and do, but, yeah. Having that ability to just sort of throw somebody forward and pull out, you know, your opponent's whole warband potentially sort of around them and sort of go into this very high risk sort of aggressive move when you could potentially just, you know, completely whiff all your rolls and do nothing, or, you know, you could roll hot and wipe out three or four people. Right. And I just... personally, I just really like stuff like that. I don't think you're going to see that card get used very often just because of how risky it is to surround one of your fighters, but sure. I just thought it was really entertaining. And then, of course, having the Goblin Fanatic there in the art is just, you know, it kind of, it's pretty great.
So what I think is interesting about Center of Attention is that it is... So Irresistible Prize has that extra flexibility of actually being able to pull somebody onto an empty objective, so you got a lot more play as far as moving people around. On the other hand, Center of Attention, I can pick an enemy fighter or a friendly fighter. And so some of those things we were talking about earlier, where you pull someone back or pull someone forward, Now, all of a sudden, you've got the ability to have like mobile. Basically, you know, we talked about placing those objectives down in useful spots. Well, if you have center of attention, you could, you know, like all of a sudden, Arnold hanging out over here is he's hanging out there in order to pull back, you know, Karsus after Karsus leaps forward to make a whack and then yank him back to safety or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
I guess Saya could be a better example there, but. Let's see. Quick hit. I think that mirror move is very interesting. It's almost like a quick thinker, but for push ploys. So we might be seeing some more of that. Not 100% sold on that, but it's possible. And then also, if you're expecting if Earthquake makes a return, then at least lets you scoot somebody back or over. What else did I want to mention here? Horrifying Howl I think it's going to fight to ever find space, but it's a Magors specific. Choose an enemy fighter that's adjacent to a friendly fighter and push them up to 2 hexes. What's interesting about that is I think it serves, you know, with a Great Concussion, one of its uses was that it could create a big opening if you made a risky charge and it didn't pull it off or got your hit in, but were worried about counterattack. Well, that can, you know, push the target back. Now if they're going to come back at you, they either got a charge, or if they've moved already, they can't, you know, get at you. And it prevents them from getting back at you just with a sidestep. So, depending on your build, why I bring that up just because there's an opening for it. Now that Great Concussion's gone, maybe it becomes a card you might see.
For sure.
Any other quick hits here?
I think I've hit on the ones that I really like. I mean, there's definitely a few I haven't even really had much time to look at yet.
Sure.
What I haven't really looked at much at the ghosts or anything, but I know they've got some interesting ones as well.
Drifting Advance is where all our chain wraps go up to 2 and closer. Pretty spectacular. Some nice limitations on it, but it works very synergizes well with their Inspire mechanic because you can do it, and all of a sudden they start their turn already next to somebody, and you have a whole bunch of ghosts just suddenly inspired. There's the Earth Shakes, which is the dwarven one that's kind of the king of them, right? It's distraction and sidestep rolled into one, just whatever you happen to need at the time. I mean, you talk about the flexibility of push ploys. Well, that's it all wrapped up in one. At the other end of the pile, I thought Grapple and Stumble were two examples of. I just wanted to bring them up. The reason that they're kind of rough is that they're both specific. They, you know, if you think like distraction, I could push a fighter in any one of 6 different directions. These are saying you're going to go exactly one way, and it's going to be only in these circumstances. They're so restrictive. I think if the reaction windows were a little clearer, and that's a topic for another show. If they're more, I want to say, rigidly established, then all of a sudden there's some room for those as the ability to freeze out enemy reactions. But as they stand, they're so restrictive with such a limited outcome. I think those are of the ploys ones you'll rarely see ever pop up.
Yeah, I would agree. I have thought about them a number of times, and ultimately I just come back to. If I have this, it's a potential dud card, and I could have just put in something that is just generically push 1 hex, and then I just use it when I need to.
Right, exactly. So in order to take Stumble, you're gonna have to take in all your distraction cards, not have anything else, and really be, you know, wanting to be able to push somebody. I don't know, the payoff seems pretty limited. So. All right. Well, that is our quick rundown. Like I said, not comprehensive. If you've got a favorite push ploy, a favorite one to love or to hate, and you want to let us know, go ahead and drop us a line. Phil, any last thoughts here that you want to share?
I guess just anything for people who maybe haven't thought of using more push ploys to just try some out. You know, if you've got a group that you can just play friendly games with, throw a few of them in there, give them a try. You might be surprised.
Yeah. I think my last Zarbag's Gitz deck, half the ploys were in push ploys of some type description or another. So, all right, Phil, thanks for being on. We've got some more episodes coming up, and you're welcome to tune in when we get a chance to do those. Maybe we'll have Phil in for him if he's feeling it. But we're looking to be talking about reactions, talking about random ploys. You know, like we used to call them 50-50s, but now there's a bunch in there that operate on less than 50-50. We'll talk about timing. We'll talk about some of the community resources. I'd love to do, especially with Phil here, do a dive into the Reaver Warband. We'll get some Warband-specific things going. So all to come. If there's something you really want to hear, let us know. Phil, are you available on Twitter? Would you care to be contacted?
I do not have Twitter.
All right.
I know I'm living in the dark ages here, but
all right.
I do not have a Twitter.
I'll tell you what. You can get me at @red_Zeke. We'll be looking to get a show Twitter set up as well. And you can, if you want to pass something on Phil, we'll get one of those spots and hit you up there. All right. I think that's it for us. We'll see you in the future on another episode of What the Hex. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
It's got to be like an OSHA ulcer-inducing thing. Like, I can't...
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe how somebody signed off on this.